Tony, good morning. Tony Black, everybody.
Good morning, Steve. Stand by me. June 15th, 1970, 106.40. What a song they wrote. Now, that horse won after the song, but I tell everybody the horse won and then the song was written. But, of course, you know, I gotta toot my own horn every once in a while.
You could at least say that there were some versions that were recorded after you won.
You think B.B. King would get upset, would he, if I said that the song, if he heard that, he would be maybe upset, B.B., because
Benny King.
He was the first one to come out with the song, wasn't he? And that's the original, I believe. But, hey, Steve, you know, I haven't been to the racetrack in a few days, but I've been listening to you. And here I am at, right, you know, around the, over the bridge from Park's racetrack, and I find out that Spun to Run isn't going to run by you. Now, how good is your show with information when here I'm just over the bridge and go to the track generally, speaking, I'm there, and I didn't know he wasn't going to run. But you know what? It makes Arid's decision or his agent's decision or whoever's decision it was to ride with Augusto look like a better decision, doesn't it? Because he would have wound up maybe not riding the race or picking up something else, I'm sure. But it looked like a tough decision, and then it turns out the result of a tough decision, it looked easy now.
Well, it's kind of crazy. I mean, given everything that went on, I saw Guerrero say, you know, he said it's almost like the horse knew. The horse clearly, this situation, it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, they didn't get to the barn this morning and they saw the hives and they saw the, you know, the marks and, you know, it's basically like a measles kind of a look.
Right.
And
there's a zillion reasons for it to pop out, and everybody can see that the hide has bumps on it, or, you know, like what you want to call them, hives, and some of them scurf up, and no matter how you treat it, it's there, and it does affect the horse in a negative way. And it's a viral thing. It's also a thing like, hey, maybe one horse got it and happened to use the same girth without a cover, or girths weren't disinfected. And, you know, you can pass it on to horse very easily. It's not a tough thing for horses to get. They can get it easily. And you hit on one thing. When it comes to stress and, you know, and their systems may be a little off, they're more susceptible to get it. But that's a shame, because I was really rooting for him. I was really proud of Guerrero and Spun to Run after they won the Breeders' Cup Mile. And here's a guy that never usually, well, I rode a couple winners for him, but didn't really like my style of riding, and but has really done well at Parks and is going through his tough situations and times, and came up with a horse like this. A guy, you know, deserves the respect that he was getting when he did win the Breeders' Cup race. And, you know, it's just a funny game. One day things are going right and it looks so easy, and the next time you look up, things happen that are not going right, and it looks tough. But that's horse racing. Horse will survive, he'll survive, and they'll survive to race compete another day.
Exactly. And you know, this is something that, you know, the blood count will be spiked, and, you know, there's just no way. I mean, you can deal with it later. I will say a funny, you know, there is a funny corollary to any kind of a skin disease and any kind of a hive rash on a horse, and blind luck, who was, you know, kind of a reedy thing to begin with. I mean, there wasn't much to her, And she had an episode at some point, maybe as a yearling or as a 2-year-old. And so, they'll leave like little scars, little discolorations on the skin and even patches, that take a long time, for the hair to grow back. And Guerrero mentioned that the horse did get, shorn, did get a clipping a couple of weeks ago. And he thinks maybe that may have helped trigger it. But anyway, I remember being at Churchill for the lead up to the Oaks, and I got my first look at Blind Luck in person. And she had this skin disease scars or the marks, Tony, and she looked like a little ragamuffin, like a complete ragamuffin. I thought, this is Blind Luck. I said, I can't. I and I was all in on Evening Jewel anyway, but all she did every time you let her over is just, lay it out. She was amazing.
Yeah. You get horses like that, and they spoil you at times, don't they? I mean, they go over there, they put it out every time, and you can count on them. And horses are tremendous athletes. And any given day, that tremendous athlete can have an off day. The jockey can have an off day. Who knows? But it's only one way you can win, and that's getting to the wire in front. And there's a million ways to get beat.
That's for sure. Tony, I don't know if you heard me earlier, I think on Monday, but something came up and I got totally distracted going over some results from the Laurel weekend. And the first race result that I was reading was the What a Summer. And I remembered that you had ridden her, and sure enough, I went and looked it up and to get a refresher, and I think you told the story that you got it as a pickup mount,
right?
At Aqueduct one day.
Garden State burned down. That was the one positive. The Garden State burning down. It was 1977, April 14th. It burned down, and of course, riders shipped around. I had some clients that were sending horses to New York. Danny Lopez had a horse he ran that day in an early race called On a Duel. I think On a Duel maybe won. And I'm walking back, and Leroy Jolly stops me. He says, "Hey, Black." He says, "You want to hang around? You can ride my horse in the state." And I says, "Yeah." I'm looking at the guy thinking, was he just goofing around? He says, "Yeah, I'm tired of what's going on." There was a couple riders, and he said it in a way, I'm not going to talk and say it like he said it on the radio. I'm not going to say it. But, and he says, "I'm tired of that bit, that blah, blah, blah." He says, "Tell Carcass Scales the name you're on the horse in the eighth race, What a Summer." And I went upstairs and I told the Carcass Scales, I guess it was Sal or one of those guys, I forget. And he says, "Oh, I got to hear from the trainer." He says, "This horse is entered open and there's a lot of controversy right now going on." And I said, "Well, then page him. He'll come up and name me. He just told me." I said, "I'm done, but I'm going to stay for this one." And I thought, he'll be up. He came up about a couple races before, and he says, "Yeah, I told Black the name on the horse," and that's how I wound up on him. It was just one of those things. I was would have never been up in New York at the time if Garden State didn't burn down. I was leading rider at Garden State when it burned down. I was like 13 in front, or 12 or 13 in front of Jimmy Edwards, so I was having good meat. I was sorry to see the place end up in a fire. And never even got the recognition of being a leading rider to the middle of the meet. But that's all right. I wound up riding What a Summer, and it was a great pickup mount, and she won for fun. And she really impressed me, because just a couple, wasn't too long before that, I had ridden, my Juliet was running at the time. Yeah, sure. My Juliet was running. And she had run and been retired. And I guess this was What a Summer.
There was sort of a connection anyway to the Mid-Atlantic anyway. The way What a Summer's career had kind of turned, because Milt Pollinger had died, and there was at the Hialeah Winter Sale, there was a partial dispersal. His wife Helen continued on, right?
Right. Helen continued on what a summer was being trained at that time in Maryland by Buddy Delp.
Yes.
And he trained for Milt Pollinger, and he trained for years after that, I guess, for Helen. I guess he did. She's still at a horse's living. But it was funny how the horse changed hands, you know, because of the owner situation. And Leroy wound up getting her.
The Firestones. The Firestones. They bought her.
Yeah, and you know what? I got the letter, and I still have it. One day I'll send it if I can dig through some of my stuff. After that, one of the Firestones, I guess what was their name?
Bert sent me
a letter after I rode her and thanked me for the unusual circumstances of picking up a horse and riding her. He sent me a thank you letter.
That's classy.
I said, what class? I saved the letter. I've got a memorabilia, tons of it. But I saved the letter. I said, man, you're thanking me, and I should be writing you a thank you letter and sending you back your 10% because it was just a thrill and an honor to ride her. But it's funny how things can go, and it's funny in this business how jocks and agents and different things can happen, and you make decisions, and sometimes you make wrong ones, sometimes you make the right ones. When you're in that groove and making the right decisions, like I said just earlier, the game looks easy. But, you know, it's a tough game at times. Not always easy, is it, Steve?
No, God, no. No, no, no. Bert and Diana. The wife is Diana Firestone.
Yeah, it was Bert. Was Bertram? Bertram?
Yep. Yeah. Bert Firestone. They're still. I don't know how many horses they. I don't know how many horses they've got these days, but a great.
I'm going to look for that letter and take a picture of it. I'll go down to my mom's house one day in the next few days and find that letter because
I love it.
I'll send you a picture of it, and I thought this is. You know, it's something you put value in and you cherish riders, you know, especially a rider. I wasn't a New York rider. I was riding in Jersey and Pennsylvania, you know, and that was my home base. And then you get the opportunity. And afterwards, I thought, man, I rode some nice sprinters. And My Juliet, of course, was one of the ones on the top of the list. And What a Summer. And a horse called Dave's Friend, another one that I rode several times because another jock broke his arm, Vince Percali, who just called me last night. He just called me, and I was thinking we were talking about Dave's Friend. Every time he got hurt, I wound up riding him, and I won the stakes on him. There was another horse, a sprinter that I rode, that was really a nice sprinter because the jock got like 30 or 60 days, I forget, Billy Phelps, and I rode a horse called Danny Dotsie. They were all top sprinters. Three of them were recognized as top sprinters and Eclipse Award winners. But you know what? Sometimes you're in the right place at the right time, and other times you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. I've been lucky in this game.
Now, I wanted to bring her up, and you know, she actually has a lot in common with My Juliet, you know, the rest of her career, because she won a couple of fall high weights. Dr. Patches beat her less than a length in the Vosburgh, and you know, she faced the boys. She was a serious race mare, and she was a champion that year. The year that you rode her in 77, and it was 77 or 78, but
77, I believe.
Well, because you were, because Juliet was, when what year
77,
was
she? 77, she was 76, 77, I rode her to the end of her career, and then I guess this one was right after My Juliet.
So actually, she might have been the champion at 78, and that was, you know, that's the period when, you know, there wasn't a male and female sprint champion. There was one sprint champion.
Right.
You were champion with My Juliet in 76, and What a Summer was the champion in 77.
And then it was a few years after that, I forget, then Dave's Friend wound up being a sprint champion, but I think that was probably in the 80s.
That was 80 already. That was in the 80s because Dr. Patches won it in 78. Star de Nascra in 79. A great era in sprinting. I wanted to bring it up because Milt Poldinger is an important name and it's kind of forgotten. Famous in Maryland breeding, a terrific. I thought it was a great little side topic. I do also have to add about a passing that I haven't discussed yet. Since the first of the year. I mean, we're into, what is this already? The second full week.
Right,
Tony, how well did you know Buck Thornburg?
I knew that's where you were going to go.
Yeah.
Rode a lot with him. He rode in Jersey a lot. He'd go to Florida for a winter and come back up with him sometime at Garden State in April, and he would ride through the Jersey circuit. It just shows been in this game a long time. And he was one of the established older riders and had been riding like 10 or 12, 15 years when I started, 10 or 12 years, and then I started. But these were the guys like Buck Thornburg, Walter Blum, Garth Patterson, Frank Lovato. These were the guys that I'm 68 years old, a kid coming up like me in 1970, these were the guys that you looked at and you said, let me see what he does, you know, let me watch him ride. And Buck was just he was such a nice guy, too. You know, he always had a good word for you, a joke. And, you know, when he passed, his valet called me from Florida, Blink. Blink, I don't even know Blink's full name, but Blink. We used to call him Blink. We had one eye and one glass eye. That was Blink. But Blink called me. He says, Bucky passed away today. I said, oh, Blink. And Blink's got to be probably 10 years older than Buck was. And Buck had to be about
86.
Yeah. So he was 18 years older than me. So that's what I'm saying. These guys were established riders. And Buck was one of the guys you looked at and you said, that's what I want to do. Or I better look at him. And he sat pretty on a horse, too. And he was a reducing rider, had to get in the box. He was built like a Broussard, you know, kind of tall, muscular, not super tall, but I'm 4'11", so everybody was tall when I looked at him. I guess he was about 5'5", 5'4", 5'5", you know, and I was in the box, and he was one of those guys, you know, was dedicated to what he was doing, responsible when it came to his weight. You know, he wasn't some smart ass that got on the scale and looked at the clerk of scales and he was 5 pounds over and said, oh, well, can't you let me slide? Hey, Buck went in the box and sweat, and I sat next to him many a time in the box, next to him, Ray Broussard, guys like that, you know. And you had to really respect them because in those days the weights were a lot lower also. You know, they've raised them since then. And these guys were fighting their weight on a daily basis. But just good guys to be around. You know, the guys that I just mentioned, like Ray Broussard, he had shoulders of a football. He looked like he had football pads on his shoulders when he put his car, Ray, one of the strongest riders. And then, you know, you advanced in your career, and all of a sudden you rode some horses, and you wound up winning a race that they would be on one of the horses to beat. Like, I think I forgot one day, he was riding a horse called Willowy Mood, Buck Thornburg. I think it was Willowy Mood. Nice filly that won some stakes. I think that was her name. And I beat her with a horse, I think it was Sailing One or something like that. And I was, like, so proud to beat one of the favorites and one of the guys that you looked at as an icon in the sport. And he said, man, I just beat Buck, or I just beat Ray, or one of these guys. And they were such good old riders, just tremendous riders. And some of them won big races, and some of them never won a Derby, Preakness, or Belmont, and Breeders' Cup didn't exist. When they were at the height of their career, that hadn't existed yet. But they were just good, solid riders. And good athletes. When they were on a horse's back, that horse paid attention to them, and they handled that horse in a way it needed to be handled to get the utmost performance from them. So I was just lucky to come around and ride with some of these old greats. And then when you see him passing on, it brings it brings back memories, and some of the memories, you know, it's like it brings, they're happy memories. You thought to yourself, oh, I remember when we were riding Atlantic City and Duck, and all of us, we'd go to the library on the Pike. It was called the library, the steak place. And then we'd have a big steak and a few beers and rehash the day. And you enjoyed doing that. You know, these guys were great guys to be around. And I was lucky to come around with a bunch of riders that were well established in the sports, and they were great mentors. And some of them they didn't even know that they were your mentor. You know, a guy like Phil Grimm, a tough guy. You know, never had an easy word when you asked him a question. You know, he would give you, well, what are you asking me that question for? And you watch him see what was going on. Wait, you trying to play stupid, or are you stupid? or Chris Rogers. I'll never forget. These were good guys. I'm naming guys that won thousands of races. Chris Rogers comes to me one day. He says, Doc, I know you only been riding like about a year, 6 months or a year. He says, you ride a pretty good race, but you look like a sack of shit on a horse. And here's a guy finished second on Lincoln Road in the Kentucky Derby, you know, and won a ton of races. I said, well, Mr. Rogers, you know, Mr. Rogers, yeah, that's, I never thought about it, Mr. Rogers. But I said, well, what can I do to change it? And he says, come here, and I'll show you. And at the time, you know, he was recovering alcoholic and still smoked a little bit, had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. He says, get on this bench, and I'll show you how to sit on a horse, because nobody ever showed you what. And the voice was gruff, just like I'm saying it. I'm not making it up. You put your chest on your knees, you drop your heel, you put your toe up, and you put your knees into the pommel of the saddle and sit there firm, and you stretch your ass back. I mean, I never forgot this stuff. You don't bounce off their horse's ass. You don't bounce off of it. And then you say, and I'll never forget, he says, you don't bounce off their ass like hardtack does. You know, these guys are competitive. You'll be bouncing off of their kidneys. I'm telling you stories 50 years ago, right? And I still remember the conversations, because that's how much you respected these guys. You know, I was fortunate. I got a shot to ride with guys like Bill Hartack and Merlin near the end of his career. Guys like Chris Rogers. I was just lucky to be catching the tail end of some of these great riders and being able to utilize the lessons that they taught me. Maybe I got lucky where that's why I lasted as long as I did. Or maybe it was just all luck, Steve.
he a couple of notes about Thornburg. He came from Muncie, Indiana. He rode his first winter at Scarborough Downs, which really tells you all you need to know. 1950, they were running thoroughbreds, known as a harness track, subsequently. But his big horse was Plug Nickel.
Plug Nickel. They won the Florida Derby on Plug Nickel, didn't he?
He did.
Won the Florida Derby, finished sixth or seventh in the Kentucky Derby, but was one of the favorites, I believe.
You're right. He was 5-2. And
we were rooting for him.
Yeah.
You know, you sit there in the jock's room, and it's the first Saturday in May, and one of the guys that you rode with on a daily basis is in the Derby, and boy, you couldn't root any harder for him, like you rooted for him in the Florida Derby. And he loved winning the Florida Derby, because Florida was someplace he spent many a winter, you know. But he was I don't know the exact amount of races. Do you have it? He had to win 30-some-hundred races, didn't he?
He sure did. He won
3,433.
Yeah. Retired in his, actually, he made it, he rode into his 50s, late 50s.
Yeah.
But and there's Willowy Moose. She won the Barbara Fritchie in 86. But, just looking, and Tommy, what we could do is get, in fact, he could be listening, Pat Kelly, because Pat would tell you a lot. He picked up the mount on Plug Nickel inadvertently, apparently, at Pimlico.
Yeah.
And he got his first grade one win in the Laurel Futurity that day, and then they won the Remsen together. Came back in the winter. They started at Hialeah, and after a prep, they won the Hutchison. They won the Florida Derby. They won the Wood Memorial ahead of the Kentucky Derby, and then he lost the mount. I don't know if he got hurt or if ownership made a change, but then Jeff Fell picked him up, and he won the Tom Fool. He won the Jim Dandy. He was fourth in the Travers. Then he tried the Jerome, and then he cut back to the Vosburgh and won it, and he also won the Stuyvesant, and he ended up being named champion sprinter that year.
Yeah. And that's something. Here's a horse that could go long and wound up being one of the champion sprinters. And, that was a tough division, sprint division.
A key to the mint, Colt.
Yeah.
Out of the mint.
Boy, how many years we've been around? I can remember Key to the Mint running.
Absolutely.
Letters, Key to the Mint, horses like that, the names just pop up. And then you say, man, I saw that horse run. I've watched that horse run in Jersey and the Garden State, I watched this one run in the Gardenia. You've been there with me. We've been in the game quite a long time. And all of a sudden, you look up and you say, man, I'm one of those old guys that you used to think when you were a kid you were never going to be. And yesterday I got an interesting phone call from a guy in Maryland, another jock that won 3,000 races, Vince Percalli Jr. And he called me and says, I've been just thinking about your Blackbird. He always called me Blackbird. Been thinking about your Blackbird. He says, don't forget to call me February 20th. And I think he got married on the 22nd of February, and I was best man for him. But he says, don't forget to call me on the 20th. I said, what's the 20th? He said, that's the day we got stuck for almost 15 or 20 hours in a snowstorm driving to my home in West Virginia when they canceled Bowie that day. We drove to go get, because I was getting married in 2 days, and we got stuck in a snowstorm, a blizzard. They canceled Bowie because of blizzard, but we're driving from Maryland to West Virginia. We got stuck on 81 or 78, one of them roads, and we were stuck. And he says, and the only thing that saved your ass from pushing me out of the snow and you were soaking wet is I brought my dirty clothes, my laundry home. And he said, but we were a day late to my wedding. And that was that was before they had cell phones. We were stuck on this road, and the last 8 or 9 hours, we ran out of gas. Now we're stuck in a blizzard on the road, and there's all kinds of people stuck. One of the old grooms, Denny, who just passed away, got in the car because we had the booze for the wedding, and we still had gas. And then we was drinking the booze for the wedding. And Denny's drinking it with us. We never shut the car off, and it ran out of gas. Now we're stuck in this car with no heat for 8 hours, and we're freezing to death. Denny got frostbitten fingers. And the reason I'm bringing up Denny, because he just passed away about a year ago. And Jimbo and I are cuddling up to each other, trying to stay warm, and we got all our dirty clothes on, laundry. We didn't make it to the wedding. He got married the next day, a day after. You talk about not making it to the wedding. Where were you guys? We were in a blizzard. The half track came out and got us from National Guard, and they took us to the firehouse. The cars were all stuck. We went and got the cars out a couple days later. But we almost froze to death, Steve. And when he called me yesterday, that was his whole reason. Look, don't forget to call me February 20th. That's when we got stuck in that blizzard. 1970, I guess it was 72. 72. I said, you're still married to the same girl, and you were stuck in a blizzard. You almost died and froze to death. I was your best man. I was your best man. And you're still married. God bless you, Jimbo. I've been through three of them.
That's great. That is true. You've never done that. That's a story you've never told. That's tremendous.
I remember sitting in the car saying, Jimbo, it's one thing when you're getting on horses and you're freezing your ass off when you're cold, but you can get back off the track and get warm right away. I said, you're sitting in a car and you're freezing and there's no place to go and they've got no heat. And it's you're there for 8 or 9 hours, and you don't even know if anybody knows where you're at or when they're going to come get you. That's a scary feeling.
Yeah.
Freezing to death.
That's for sure.
You know? But that's one of the stories I ain't told, and it's just funny because Jimbo called me, and you were talking about what a summer. We were talking about Dave's friend, how I wrote him when he broke his arm. When Jimbo broke his arm, we were talking about all that. But your show is so much fun to listen to. I thank you so much, Steve. Really, you do a great job.
Not at all. It's all you and all the visitors and all the guests telling stories like that. And I'm even going to continue a little bit with Haskin because that story with Plug Nickel and going over Plug Nickel. I mean, I see the dam toll booth. You know, that's one of the great families in recent memory. And Missy Baba and Raja Baba and all of the Babas and the whole tremendous sauce boat happens to be the dam's toll booth's half brother was Sauce Boat, who was terrific. And actually, he was by Key to the Mint, so you can understand why Mr. Schiff went to Key to the Mint with her and ended up getting Plug Nickel. These are horses. It's funny, and you mentioned Willowy Mood. That's another, really, these are really nice horses. The time is kind of forgotten a little bit. I mean, luckily there is a Plug Nickel Stake and a What a Summer and, thank goodness, you get these kinds of horses get, remembered at least,
Willowy Mood, the reason, I guess because I competed against her, I remembered her, and I remember it was just like you felt honored to be able to compete against a horse like her and Buck Thornburg. Buck was a great competitor, strong rider, and was a good guy to be around in the jocks room. And then you beat him one day, and you know what? You never fazed anybody in the jocks room when you beat each other. Here you are, you're taking money out of each other's pockets and competing, but you're doing it in a fair spirit of competition. And if you can't handle that, then you don't last in this business. And guys like Buck Thornburg taught me there's a fair spirit of competition. There's a way you ride where you ride up to the line, and do your best. Don't cross the line. And you come back to the jocks room and you show tremendous respect for each other. That was Bob Thornburg. The guys like I mentioned, Walter Blum, Phil Grimm, all those guys, Frank Lovato, Garth Patterson, Chris Rogers, the list goes on and on. Ray Broussard. The respect level that they taught you, not just how to ride, they taught you how to conduct yourself in the barn area. They taught you how to conduct yourself in the jocks room. And if you couldn't benefit from their lessons, you didn't last.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's true. That's true in any walk of life, too. I mean, if you got to learn from somebody, I did it with business and went out and you get corporate America and they pair you up with somebody as a mentor and, you sit, they feed you all kinds of information. There's some formal book learning and such and then they smooth out the edges with that kind of advice, with that kind of practical, Dutch uncle, as they call it, advice. So
that's why guys like you have benefited in any business that you were in, because you knew how to take that advice and not use it as criticism and resent it. Used it as, this is how I'm going to learn, and this is what you do to be able to stay in a business that's highly competitive. Like you said, I don't care what the business is. There are many businesses out there. They're all competitive. But you know what, Steve? It's great to think back and reminisce, and I appreciate you letting me do it.
No, it's great. It's some of my favorite. It's sad. Obviously, we send out best wishes to Buck's two children, Jimmy and Marguerite. He's also got five grandchildren. 86, Buck Thornburg, and it leads to, you know, some other fun memories.
Rita, his wife, she even had a travel agency. I remember Rita, Buck's wife. And, you know, the family was took a lot of lessons from Buck, because even her business was successful for quite a while. So, you know, Buck was a good influence on many people, not just in the jocks room, but the people that he was around. And it's fun.
Nice.
It's a great influence.
Nice. Tony, this was great, and I appreciate it, and we'll catch up next week.
Well, I appreciate it more. Thank you so much, Steve. Keep up the good work, and it's always a pleasure. You know that.
Tony Black, everybody, the one and only. I love it. Let's take a break. Steve Haskin standing by. We got lots to do with Haskin. I guess we'll start with Empire Maker. Long-standing relationship with Bobby, and you know, chronicling that Triple Crown season in particular. So I'm sure there'll be some Empire Maker thoughts, some Pegasus thoughts, some Smarty Jones previewing, some recapping to see what he thinks of Nadal. I don't know if I've got time to bring up Plug Nickel with him. maybe we'll see. We obviously got lots to do. We also got Rich Eng later. Not sure about Matt Hegarty today or not. If we don't talk to Matt today, we'll save it for probably Tuesday. We want to talk about the Congressional Commerce Subcommittee having hearings next week. Plenty of time to get to that. Quite a bit of other, you know, hard news to discuss when we catch up with Matt. But Steve Haskin is next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Under the island, middle of the mountain, there is a big bad booming system. Blowing speakers, woofers and tweeters, amplifiers, melted wires. The party's exploded, chorus corroded, underground, the Puget Sound.
We're back at the races. And I'm drifting. About 10 minutes to the top of the hour, and Steve Askin here to join us, and we got so many things to talk about with Steve. The action on the racetrack, of course, including three-year-old racing from last week, the LeCompte, then tomorrow's Smarty Jones, the feature on opening day at Oaklawn. There's Pegasus, but it's hard not to have Steve open the visit this morning with some memories of Empire Maker. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I don't know if you had a chance to hear Garrett O'Rourke on Tuesday after the news had spread. Yeah. His favorite Judd Mont horse with his long career.
Yeah. What could have been with that horse, I'll tell you. It's funny, I remember sitting in Bobby Frankel's office. It was in 2000, and he was just getting good in New York. He had moved his tack, and brought a lot of good horses to New York, and he had Aptitude that year. He ran second in the Derby. He had a good year. He won the Gold Cup with Aptitude. I remember that fall sitting in his office, and he had just gotten back from Judmont. And he started telling me about this weanling that he saw by Unbridled out of Tucson, who was one of his all-time favorites. And I remember his exact words. This is a weanling. He says, I'm going to win the Triple Crown with that colt. That's how much he fell in love with that horse. And he couldn't wait. He could not wait for that horse to get to the racetrack. And he touted that horse like crazy. And I remember he wound up going off at 2-5 in his career debut and going a flat mile at Belmont. And he was, he came from out of it, like seventh or eighth or so. And he makes this big, sweeping four-wide move, and he easily draws off and wins by 3-4 lengths under a hand ride. So, I mean, everything that Frankel had predicted 3 years earlier, looked like it was starting to come to fruition. That's how high he was on the horse. And he was so high on him that off the one race, he puts him in the Remsen. And it's only his second start. He goes off as the favorite and just has a horrible trip. I remember he bobbled badly coming out of the gate. And then he had a check. He was in traffic. And it was just a bad race, for a second start out. He ran okay. He finished third. He was beaten like five lengths or so by Tocket. As a three-year-old, he puts him in the Sham Stakes, and he was like, I remember how disappointed he was after that race, because he goes off at 2-5 again, and he runs second. He gets beat a length. It was just an ordinary race, and I remember Bobby just couldn't understand it, how he could get beat, because, I mean, you're talking about a horse that he's convinced is going to win the Triple Crown. So he decides to that he's got to get the horse away from San Anita. He figures he doesn't like San Anita, so... And he's going to put blinkers on him. So he sends him to Gulfstream for the Florida Derby, puts blinkers on the horse, and he just goes off and he wins by like 10 lengths. and he gets a 108 buyer number. And I don't know what his racks number was, but Bobby was a big racks guy. And he started, I remember he's going back and forth, and I remember talking to him about it. And he said, you know what? He says, I'm really tempted to go straight into the Derby with this horse. I said, oh, Bobby, you know, and we're talking, and he said, you know, I said, you know, he's only had, you know, the four starts, and, you know, the Florida Derby was quite a ways before the, you know, before the Kentucky Derby. And he was really tempted to do it because he did, you know, he did not want to risk giving him another race before the Derby because he had run his eyeballs out. He had peaked in the Florida Derby. I mean, you run a 108 buyer and you win by 10 lengths. And he started looking at the Wood Memorial, and he looked at the field, and he said, ah, there's really nothing much in there. You know, I mean, Funny Side at the time was coming from Fairgrounds. He had run like third in the Louisiana Derby. He was nothing, really, at the time. And I remember Bobby said, you know what, I figure I'll go up to the Wood Memorial, get him an easy Derby prep. And I think it was a move that, until the day he died, he regretted doing that. Because they had a heavy rain, and the track was drying out, and it was listed as muddy. And the last thing that Bobby wanted was to have a hard race with the horse. He just wanted to come in and give him just a workout, and then get ready for the Derby. And he won the Wood, but you know, it was hard fought. And the thing is, he only won by a half a length. But if you watch the race, Jerry Bailey just sat on him, and he just refused to ask him because he was deathly afraid. And even though Funny Side, who wasn't expected to run with him, was right there with him on the inside, Jerry Bailey just did not persevere with the horse at all. Yet, you know, he still was a half a length on a drying out track. And then he comes out, and you remember he runs, and Bobby finds out he gets a 111 buyer in the number, and Bobby's freaking out. So he was afraid of the 108 buyer. Now the horse has got a 111 buyer, so Bobby's like totally freaking out. The horse's buyers are jumping every single race, and he just doesn't know if he can continue, you know, to improve. But he says, well, you know, maybe he's that good. Gets to Churchill Downs. And what does he find out? Horse has got a foot bruise, and Bobby was like devastated. He tried to downplay it a bit, and it seemed like, you know, that track was just like at Backwoodup was just too hard. It was sealed, and it was just too hard for him. And he had the bruise going, and he aggravated it, and he was not allowed to train him. And I shouldn't say he wasn't allowed. He couldn't train him for like the week before the Derby. And I remember Diane Volz, who, you know, who was a therapist, and her assistant were there. And they came over to me and they said, listen, you know, we have this machine. You know, if we use it on Empire Maker, we really think it's going to help his bruise. It's really done remarkable things. It really helps the healing process. We're afraid to go over to Bobby and ask him. He said, you know him really well. You know, can you mention this thing to him? He said, you know, it's not going to hurt him, but it could help him get to the Derby. You know, it was a week before the Derby. You know, he's got a foot bruise. So I go over to Bobby and tell him about it. And Bobby goes totally ballistic. I mean, he starts F-bombing all over the place. He goes, get the F out of here. He says, I don't need that crap, except he didn't use the word crap. And then he just goes off, and I went back to Diane and the other girl. I said, forget about it. He doesn't want anything to do with it. So he starts working on the horse, and he's optimistic. He says, you know, he'll be okay. Don't worry about it. He'll be okay. I don't know if he really meant it. And finally, on the day before the Derby, he finally is able to get him out for a gallop. He wasn't on the racetrack. He couldn't do anything with him. So he wanted to give him a good stiff gallop. So he sends him out for a gallop. And he starts, I remember, and the thing is, I remember him telling me the week, he says that, you know, this whole week's been like a soap opera. So the main thing is that before that happened, I remember at the post position draw, you know, back in those days, you had a choice of where you draw. So, you know, if you draw one, right, you don't get post one. You get the first choice. So Bobby had a choice of breaking from the inside or from post 12. And Jerry Bailey was there and said, I want to be on the outside. You know, because to keep him away, you know, he's going to be, you know, favorite. I want to keep him on the outside. I don't want him on the inside. So they chose, you know, post 12. So anyway, so he decided to, you know, he decided to give him that one gallop the day before the race. And, you know, the horse is out of Tussaud, who was a nutcase herself. And Empire Maker, soon as he breaks off into his gallop, he bolts to the outside fence and comes to a dead stop. And just stands there, and that's it. The whole gallop was aborted. So this horse goes into the Kentucky Derby with no training, not even a gallop, the whole week of the race. And he hadn't had a work down there. I mean, any horse, there was no way in the world that horse had any shot in the race. So as it turns out, you know, going into the first turn, the horse gets hung wide in the first turn, and Jerry Bailey, always, the years after, by the way, regretted choosing the 12th hole, you know, because he did the other way. He would have been able to save ground, but he just lost too much ground. And he runs an absolute monster race to finish second. And, you know, who beats him? Funnyside. You know, nobody knew at the time what Funnyside was until that race. Nobody thought that Funnyside was a mile and a quarter horse. And so, you know, Bobby was, like, absolutely devastated. After the race, so you know, he worked on it and pointed him for the Belmont. And the one little thing that people don't realize is that they had so much bad weather before the Belmont Stakes, and it rained for like 4 days in a row. And Bobby needed to get he needed to get four workouts in the horse. And I remember he got two works out in him, and he needed to get a third work, and he couldn't work him. 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. So I call him up and I'm talking to him, and he said, you know what? He says, this is going to sound crazy, but you know what I'm going to do? He says, I just found out from Garden State that there was so much rain that they had already taken the Jersey Derby off the grass. He says, you know what? He says, I'm going to run him in the Jersey Derby instead of working him. He said, I was just going to, you know, give him a race, and that'll be his workout. So and I remember the turf course had been listed as yielding, but what happened is that Bobby was in the racing secretary's office. He was in with Mike Lakow, and Chris Clement walks in, and Bobby hears Chris Clement ask Mike Lakow if he could have permission to work Dynever, who was in the Belmont Stakes, on the grass to open up the grass course for training. And Mike said okay. Well, Bobby heard that. He said, well, you know, the heck with the Jersey Derby. If he's going to do it, I'll do it. So he worked Empire Maker on, you know, on the grass, and you know, instead of running him in the, and then, so he had one work to go, and this was like the big important work, and he put Aaron Grider up, and I remember being in his office, and Jerry Bailey shows up, and Jerry Bailey was fully expecting to work the horse. And Bobby tells him, you know, he says, I'm not going to have you work the horse. I'm having Aaron Grider work the horse, and you're going to be on Midas Eyes, which is another good horse that Bobby had, a fast horse.
Midas Eyes, sure.
Yeah, and I remember Jerry Bailey said to Bobby, he said something like, he said, look, he says, I don't care. He says, you know, I'm only interested in, you know, what's going to happen. You know, the end result is the important thing. He says, if I have to, I'll check my ego right here. He says, you know, you do what you have to do. So they worked in company, and Bobby, you know, most trainers go up into the, to the stands to watch it. Bobby watches it from the apron, right outside the cafe. You can't see anything from there. One thing about Bobby, he never watched workouts. If you watched him at the Derby, he would just like stand on the back stretch, and he would just strictly go by what the rider told him. He would never watch it work. So here's Empire Maker's workout. Instead of going up into the boxes to watch the work or having binoculars or something, he's down on the apron. All you can see is basically the horse coming over the finish line and, you know, galloping past you. There's no way in the world he's going to see it. And I remember we're walking, and he just can't wait to speak to Aaron Grider. So he he catches up to Aaron Grider as he's coming off over there, and you know, he just wanted to know how he looked. So Aaron Grider starts telling him. He says, "Oh, you know, he looks. You know, he felt really good. It was a good work." And Bobby just like interrupted him, and just said, "I just want to know if he's going to win. That's the only thing I want to hear. Don't tell me anything. I don't care about the workout. Just tell me if he's going to win." And Aaron Grider says, "He says, yeah. Oh, don't worry about it. He says, he says he'll win." He says, I'm going to win you your first classic, for years." And then I remember Bobby sitting in the track kitchen, by the way, and everybody's talking about, he's the villain, and he loved it. Bobby loved being a villain. He says he wanted nothing more in life than to not only win a classic, but to spoil Funny Side from winning the Triple Crown that Empire was supposed to win 3 years earlier.
Right.
And he just loved, being the villain. He admitted it. He says, I like being the villain. And I remember when Funny Side, the Wednesday before the Belmont Stakes, Funny Side works 5 furlongs from 57 and change. And I remember Bobby said, "That's it." He said, Barclay Tag is coming back, and everybody's coming back and saying, "Oh wow, what a great work!" And Ronnie Anderson was there saying, "Oh, this is incredible work." And I saw Bobby. The first thing Bobby said, he says, "Forget it." He says, "Race is over." He said, "Oh, there's no shot." He says, "If I was that horse right now, if I trained that horse right now, I'd put him away." He says, "He has no shot." And so he was like so dead confident. And, he watched it. He watched the race in the racing secretary's office as usual and just went absolutely nuts and just went running to the racetrack in the pouring rain. It was just a horrible day that day. They still had over 100,000 people showed up, and it rained all day. And I think to this day that may have been his most satisfying win ever with all the great horses he had. But, winning that Belmont Stakes, getting that classic win and depriving Funny Side after all he went through with that horse. And, unfortunately, we never found out how good he was. He and Funny Side both scratched the week of the Travers Stakes.
Right.
Which completely, completely ruined that race. I mean, that was supposed to be the big showdown of the year, and And Empire Maker really was never, he had the soundness problems. He really wasn't the same, and had to retire him. Then he goes off to Japan, and he comes back again. And you see his name now in pedigrees all over the place. I mean, he's become a really good grandsire. His name is in a lot of pedigrees. And he carries on that same Fappiano line, that unbridled Fappiano line that's so prominent today. But Bobby absolutely loved that horse. Like I said, never saw him get greater satisfaction than winning that Belmont Stakes. But this is a horse that he predicted was going to win the Triple Crown. And you know what? If he didn't bruise that foot, I don't know of any person that would say that he wouldn't win the Triple Crown, because he was a better horse than Funny Side.
No, that's one of those years and one of those Triple Crowns where, you had a dual classic winner, and yet, I think the majority of people agree and understand that, a healthy Empire Maker, would have been a very different result.
Empire Maker we saw in the Florida Derby. I mean, that was like, for this horse to start running 108 to 111 buyer numbers, early in his career. And it's just like they kept going up every rate, 80-something, 92, 108, 111. I mean, they kept going up. And who knows how fast and how good that horse could have been. But, he was always compromised by something. And, it was just unfortunate. But he was a hell of a horse. But that was quite a Triple Crown that year, being with Bobby. And remember, he had Peace Rules that year too, who was a really good horse.
Absolutely, absolutely. Who had won the Louisiana Derby?
Yeah, he won the Haskell. I mean, he was a very, very good horse. He was just third in the Derby.
Now that I'm thinking about that, what happened in that Louisiana Derby? Calf Wayne got DQ'd.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Vaguely, yeah.
And Calf Wayne ended up getting disqualified, and I think Funny Side got moved up. I got to go back and remind myself of what happened there. That was an interesting.
I thought he had finished a legitimate third, but I might be wrong.
Now you're going to make me go look, because I know that Calf Wayne got DQ'd. I'm almost positive.
Well, I remember when the one thing I remember about Calf Wayne is him getting scratched before the Derby.
Yep. You know. Well, this really shook some people. Really were moved, and he was a horse, people of a certain
Steve? Come to thinking about it, I think what happened, I may be wrong, but I think Calf Wayne might have come a positive or something after. I don't think he got disqualified in the race. I think they took the purse money away from him after the race.
Okay. All right, that's possible.
You can check on that. But that's what's popping into my head now.
There was something went on that.
Yeah, I think Calf Wayne came up positive, and I think they took the purse. They took the purse money away from him, and that's and actually Funny Side, I believe, ran. I think Funny Side got moved up to like
he
second.
Did. He race. Did. He got that's it. That's it. He absolutely did. And Peace rules.
I think it wasn't a steward's thing. Nothing happened in the race. I think Calf Wayne came up positive, and they took the purse money away.
No, I'm confident that's
that
correct.
Up, but I think
no,
that,
I agree.
That's what I'm remembering.
I don't doubt that. I just remember that after the fact that happened. Now, Edgar wrote Peace Rules. Peace Rules was a nice horse.
He was a very nice horse.
Nothing wrong with Peace
Edmund
Rules.
Jan.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, we have to give you a chance to, because especially given your relationship with Bobby too, that a chance to talk about Empire Maker. Let's shift our attention toward the current events, and we can do some Pegasus. We can do some 3-year olds. We've got the Smarty Jones tomorrow, and you had the LeCompte on Saturday. How about that? Let's start with the LeCompte.
I thought the LeCompte actually was a pretty, normally when you see these, a lot of horses close at the finish, I shouldn't say a lot, but here you had the three. But I think the first three finishes are actually all pretty good horses. I was actually very impressed with Enforceable. In the first Derby dozen, I had already it was all ready to go, by Saturday. And I had Silver Prospect that was number 12, but after Enforceable's race, I moved him up to number 12. The main thing with Enforceable is that he had run so many times before, but he just seems to be getting better and better with each race, and I just like what I saw. I like the considering the trip that he had an outside post, and he was really far back, and he made a really big sweeping move on the outside. I just like the way he drew off in the upper stretch, tremendous extension. I mean, he was really reaching out through the stretch. I was very impressed. I think he certainly has the pedigree. Capit out of a Dixie Union mare. The whole pedigree is very strong. And then Silver State. I thought he ran an excellent race. He actually had some trouble in the race. He didn't get off well. He was back there too, and Enforceable got the jump on him, and then he was on the inside and had a swing like 7 wide in the race and had absolutely nowhere to go, and he had to bull his way through. He got bumped around, and he really had to bull his way through. My main thing with him is that he still has to prove that he can pass horses. He really hasn't shown that yet. That's the main thing with him. I know he was closing. He was closing fastest of all in the race. Which is something that you definitely want to see. But I still think Enforceable was much the best in the race. And, you know, the thing about Silver State is that, you know, his only win was a dead heat. And then he couldn't get by a horse. I think it was, Necker Island, I think it was, at Churchill Downs in the slob. He couldn't get by him, and he was second again. So he just, you know, listen, he's only run three times. In fact, his Silver State is out of an Empire Maker mare. He's one of the horses that, you know, that's got Empire Maker in his pedigree. But he's only going to get better. He's only had the three starts. He's, you know, part of Steve Asmussen, by the way. I think he must start out with like 153-year-olds or something, or at least. They come out of the woodwork. I mean, he got four in Smarty Jones. I mean, he's all over the place. Where you look, there's like Steve Asmussen horses everywhere. So he looks like he could turn out to be one of the better ones. You know, and as he races, he gets experience. He'll get better. But I thought he ran, all things considered, I thought he ran a very good race. And, you know, he just got up. I'll give him credit for passing Mr. Monomoy. He's another lightly raced horse who's only going to get better. He's Monomoy Girl's brother. So he's only going to get better. And then after Mr. Monomoy, you had a gap of, five lengths,
yeah.
Five and a quarter lengths or so to the fourth horse. And even the fourth horse, by the way, who had run big in the Kentucky Jockey Club, is Finnick to Fierce. I actually thought, even though he was five lengths behind, I thought he ran a good race. He lost a lot of ground, had to go way out in the middle of the racetrack. And, you know, he had been running, you know, last or next to last in that race, way, way back.
Well, so he's so compromised. He was badly compromised with the one eye. I mean,
it's
very hard for him to be down in the one hole.
Well, if you watch him, you can see the way he runs. You know, he always runs with his head cocked, and that didn't help him at all. And the one thing that did help him is that he was able to swing wide, which is what you want to do with that horse. You don't want to have him down there, down on the rail, because I think it's his right eye that it's missing, if I remember correctly.
That's correct. Yeah, that's what was so awkward.
Bring him to the outside so he can see all the horses inside of him. But you know, you can see he runs a lot with his head cocked, and so all things considered, if you look at the race he ran in the Kentucky Jockey Club, and even in that race you can watch, you can see his head pointing out towards the grandstand. But I thought, you know, him finishing fourth in that race was fine. I think he's going to be okay. You know, he's going to be compromised the same way Patch was compromised. But Patch ran some huge races on the Derby Trail. And I tell you what, even the fifth horse, you know, Scabbard, who was the favorite in the race, you know, I'm barely the favorite over Silver State. But he didn't have a good trip at all. I mean, he got stuck down on the inside, had absolutely nowhere to go. And had to alter course, so I certainly got to give him another shot. I mean, he's a proven Grade One stakes horse, and so I mean, I'm looking at the first five finishes here, and I wouldn't be surprised to see any one of the top five finishes come back and win the Risen Star. I mean, I think they all got a legitimate shot. So all in all, I got to give the LeCompte a pretty high. High ranking. The only negative thing is that there was an allowance race earlier in the day, the Blackberry Wine one, that was fast. They ran 2/5 faster than LeCompte. So I don't know how. So I'll have to see how good Blackberry Wine is. He's another horse that's run quite a few times, but you know he ran a very gutsy race. He was out on the lead the whole way, and then looked like he was absolutely beaten. In the stretch, he got passed, and he came back again to win. And, you know, he beat a horse that looks like he's going to be a really nice horse. This Digital, who finished four lengths ahead of the third horse, but they actually ran faster. This horse is interesting. You know, the Calumet horse by Oxbow. So we'll have to see how good he is.
But, we talked to Joe Sharp. We talked to Joe the other day, and they're excited.
Yeah, he looks like a nice horse. Like I said, you know, it took him a while before he was able to get his act together. But you know, when he broke his maiden in the slop, you know, you just didn't know. This, you know, Joe had met, you know, again was trying to make a turf horse out of him, and they took a maiden race off the turf at Churchill, and he romped in it. So, and then he put him back on the turf, you know, and he got beat. So again, you know, we'll see. You know, I mean, obviously he's not going to go back to the turf anymore. I would certainly wouldn't think. But you know, he's got speed, and he's got certainly got the pedigree. I mean, Oxbow is the son of Awesome Again, damaged by AP Indy. I think, you know, he could be a really nice horse. But again, like the fact that they ran faster in this race than he ran in the LeCompte, you know, it's hard to compare, you know, times of races. Races are run differently, different fractions and everything. But I think, you know, the fractions in the LeCompte was, you know, were significantly faster than in the allowance race. But again, you know, this is the time of the year. You know, what are you going to do is show something. Just show something. You know, you got one step at a time. You just got to keep moving forward. The one thing you don't want to do on the Derby trail is take a step backward. You know, the only time you want to take a step backward is if you take such a big step forward that it's you take too big a step forward. And the last thing you want to do is peak before you don't want to peak in January and February. So if you take too big a step forward and then you take a step backwards, that's fine. But if you want a steady progression, you want to just keep moving steadily forward to, you know, moving towards that peak effort on Derby Day. But you see these horses coming out now, maiden races. There was a really good maiden race, a horse that really impressed me over the weekend named Caracaro, who to me looks like he could be really, really good, a really good horse. But just want to see them. You just want to see them move forward. That's all. You don't have to win. You don't have to run. You don't have to run 110 buyers or 100 buyers or something like that. Just do enough to stay on the Derby trail to show that you have improvement in you. To show you have improvement in you. And then you just keep moving forward. And like I said, it's all about peaking. It's all about who's the best horse, who's peaking on Derby. You think Country House was the best 3-year-old? Country House, if you watch his races, he was moving towards a peak a peak effort. He peaked at the right time and was happened to be in the right place at the right time in a crazy circumstance.
Right.
By the way, I don't know if you saw, by the way, but that. That disqualification was voted moment of the year.
Well, that's appropriate. I mean, there's no doubt.
Which I can see. By the way, I don't know if you saw it, but you know what finished third? I can't believe it was. I think it was 121 people voted for this, and it finished third in the moment of the year. Birdie Express running loose in the in the Preakness. I mean, two of the top three moments of the year were a disqualification and a horse throwing his rider and running loose. I mean, did people ever watch horse races before? Yeah, I mean, you know how many times have seen horses do that? That 121 people voted that the top moment of the year, a horse running loose. Are these like 12-year-olds that have never watched a horse race before that were like so mesmerized by this? I mean, oh my God!
But it was a cause celeb. It made Bodie Express a personality. And before we talk about Pegasus, Steve, two things. What's your Nadal reaction?
Very impressive, except that is he another Justify? I mean, under normal circumstances, I don't see him having more than three races going into the Derby. I mean, I know Justify did it, but Justify was Justify. Justify, you know, I mean, I don't know if this horse is Justify. The chances of another horse doing what Justify did, you know, are pretty slim. Now, it is possible if Baffert wants to, he could get a fourth race in him. But I just don't think he's going to, you know, want to rush him to run him three more times after this. But he may, because he got a month head start on Justify for his, you know, for his career debut. But I think he's still got a lot to prove. You know, he beat two first time starters, both of whom I have to say were very highly regarded. You know, they both ran good races. The second and third finishes look like they could be really nice horses. Now he didn't break well. He got, you know, he got pushed to the lead. You know, he had to, you know, he had to be hustled up to get the lead. But he looked, you know, he looked strong enough in the stretch. He, you know, he galloped out well enough. But you know, he was impressive. But again, you know, I try not to get too excited over horses making their career debut. You know, sprinting. And time was good. 1:15.4 was extremely fast. But we'll see. We'll, you know, we'll see. He's bred to go long. I'll give him that. So we'll see what happens next time. We'll see what kind of what Baffert does. You know, Baffert's got, as usual, you know, he's got a lot of races to choose from. He's got a lot of different horses. We'll have to see what happens, you know, if and when, you know, Eight Rings comes back. But, you know, he's got High Velocity and he's got Thousand Words. And he's going to have to start sending these horses around the country again. You know, obviously he'll be at Oaklawn and some will keep here. And I would imagine High Velocity would probably go into Robert Lewis. And we'll see what he does with you know, with Thousand Words. If you know, if, you know, he's going to run somebody big in the Rebel or the Southwest. So you know, we'll see. You know, it's too early. You know, he can get you excited, but if he had had a race last year at the end of the year, you know, and this was his second start, he had to have a little bit of a foundation, a racing foundation. Mm. You know, but, you know, unlike, you know, he, like I said, he's got a head start on Justify. However, you know, his race was 5.5 furlongs. Excuse me, 6.5 furlongs. So, you know, it's not like he made his debut with, yeah, at a 7 or a mile or a little bit more of a testing distance. So he's got a, you know, he's got a ways to go. See what he does in his next start. But he could be a good one, obviously.
Yeah. Well, let's turn our attention quickly and get the Smarty Jones in, Steve, and then we'll get your Pegasus thoughts to wrap it up.
Well, obviously, Silver Prospect has got a chance now to get back into the top 12. You know, I kept watching the race. At first, when I watched the Kentucky Jockey Club, I sort of dismissed it because 'tis the law. You know, I thought it was best horse and just had a bad trip and. I just throw the race out. But the more I watch it, the more I look at Silver Prospector, I said, you know, there's no reason. There's another horse, you know, Asmussen, you know, he tried to make a grass horse out of him. That turned out badly. He never did anything on the grass. Tried the dirt. He's run 3 huge races on the dirt. And his race in the Kentucky Jockey Club was a good, solid race. He made a steady run. You know, he beat Finnick the Fierce, who looks like a good horse, and he beat Tis the Law, even though Tis the Law, I still, you know, he throw that race out. Tis the Law, just if you watch Tis the Law's race, by the way, he just completely lost his action. He was like boxed in. He had no way to go. He tried to bowl his way through horses, and he switched back to his left lead. He had no action at all in the stretch. But Silver Prospect, you know, still gonna be the horse to beat. Now, a horse, the only really non-stakes horse that I have in the top 12, the horse that I've been very high on, has been this 3 Technique, who I thought his maiden race at Saratoga was as impressive a maiden race. You know, he went 1:22 and change for 7 furlongs, made a monster, absolute monster move in that race, and just absolutely blew away his opposition. Love his stride. He runs real low to the ground. Got interesting, you know, the breeding being by Mr. Speaker. You don't usually you see any Mr. Speakers around, especially on the Derby trail. And then he came back at Aqueduct and he won. His time was slow and his buyer, I don't know what his buyer was, but I think it was pretty low. But, you know, the time was slow. But if you watch the race, you know, I ran Ortiz, was just, looking back the entire length of the stretch. And the horse won. It was just a workout for him. But I'm just very impressed. Now here's a horse I'm telling you about when I talk about moving forward. He drew post 9, which I'm not crazy about. 9 out of 9. I don't like horses in the outside post. You know, they break to the outside all the time, and it's just hard to get them to prevent them from losing ground in the first turn. But you know what? If you look at the horses in here, you got Shoplifted in here, who is a legitimate, you know, stakes horse. He just came off a win, you know, over a really good horse, an Answer In, in the Springboard Mile. you know, he's second in the hopeful. He's a really nice horse. Steve Asmussen, of course. What else is new? And of course, you got, you know, Silver Prospector, the other, you know, one of the other Asmussen horses in there. And the thing is, you even got a horse like, I don't know what to expect from Nucky. I mean, this horse had a very strange career. You know, I mean, the horse wins the Del Mar Futurity at 35-1, and in really slow time. I mean, they just crawled in that race. And then he comes back his last two races. He's been basically just ran around the racetrack. He's been eased, wound up at Laurel in the Heft Stakes, and he just did absolutely no running at all. His 5-2 second choice. Now he's in here. I don't know what to expect from this horse. I mean, he's a Grade One winner, yet he looks in terrible form. But again, getting back to Three Technique, if he runs second or third in this race, and let's say he loses ground on the first turn, and he runs second or third, that's all I'm looking for. I don't need this horse to win this race. If he can run with Silver Prospector and with Shoplifted, that's all I'm looking for. If he, you know, because he's at a disadvantage being in the outside on the outside post. And listen, if he doesn't run well, yeah, then yes, there's always somebody to replace him. But I think he might be really a really nice horse. But that's all I'm looking for. I'm just looking for a nice result in here. You know, and there's other horses you have to watch. You know, Steve Asmussen, I mean, he's all over the place. You got this Gold Streak, you know, who's coming off of two very impressive wins. He won the Sugar Bowl and the Slop, so he's got to stretch out from six furlongs. So, you know, he's going to be right on the lead, you know, setting it up for Shoplifted and Silver Prospector. And then, of course, you got, you know, Lynn's Map, who was scratched out of, you know, Lacombe with a bad post position. You know, he drew post eight. He's not the best shape. But, you know, he's a horse that's getting better. He's won his last two, and he won at Fairgrounds, scratching out to a mile and 70 yards in the Slop. Beat Mr. Monomoy, who came back and ran big in the Lacombe. So I think he could be a really nice horse. Shared Sense looks like he could develop into a real nice horse. I don't know if he's quite ready to win this. So all in all, I think it's an intriguing race. I'm very interested in, you know, the two favorites in the race, and also you know, Three Technique to see if he can take another step forward. You know, another thing too, by the way, again, talking about Shared Sense, I tell you, he just got beat by Lynn's Map in a maiden race, and then he comes back and he runs second, but he gets beaten really badly by Blackberry Wine, who beat him by six lengths or so, 5 3/4 lengths actually. So it just shows you, you know, so he certainly boosted Blackberry Wine. If he can come back and run big here, that will boost Blackberry Wine's reputation even more. And then we'll see if you know, Peter Miller is always sneaky. You know, he travels now a lot. He runs his horses everywhere. So we'll see if he can get Nucky back. Back on at least in some kind of form. I mean, it's just, you know, his last race, and like I said, in that Heft Stakes was stopped to a walk in that race, and then he did nothing in the American Pharoah. So we'll see. It's a very intriguing race. It'll be a good way to start the weekend. And as far as the Pegasus, you know, the race sort of changed a bit. I guess you saw Spun to Run is scratched. So that takes a lot of the speed out of there. But I have mixed feelings about this race, only because of Omaha Beach. I wrote a whole column about it after the Malibu. Everything he does positively is bittersweet. Because the better he looks, the more frustrating it is. Because he could have been one of the ones. I mean, he's just such a talented, ultra talented horse. And just the thought that he's going to be retired now after this race is crushing. So, listen, I love the horse. I had him number one in my Derby list for like 7 or 8 weeks. Loved the horse from the beginning, even when he got beat by Nolo Contesto in that maiden race. I fell in love with him, and just loved following him. And he's, you know, he's just had a checkered career, you know, with some unfortunate setbacks, but. you know, I know Rick Porter's got seller's remorse, and I think he actually has come out and said that he's never going to do that again. He's never going to sell a horse's breeding rights unless he makes arrangements to run them through their four-year-old year, because he knows what he has with this horse. He's not going to get a horse like this again. You know, I mean, chances are he's not. Anything is possible. But, you know, if Omaha Beach wins this race by 6 lengths, how are you going to feel? I don't know. You're going to feel great? Yeah, right, he won. But you know what? We'll never see him again, and soon it'll be forgotten, and everybody will say, oh, how good could Omaha Beach have been? Could have been a superstar. But, you know, listen, it's not going to be, I'm not giving him the race, that's for sure. I mean, there's some really good horses in the race that are in excellent shape. The race came up pretty strong. He got Higher Power, who, you know, ironically is ridden by Flavian Pratt, who's had quite an interesting career with Omaha Beach, being his regular rider, and then, you know, choosing to ride Galilean in the Rebel when Omaha Beach came down with a quarter crack. So he had to make a decision. He chose the other horse, and then he had a chance to ride Omaha Beach when they split the race, and Mandela put Mike Smith up instead. So Flavian Pratt spent the rest of the Derby trail, by the way, in a state of total depression. So he couldn't stand the fact that every time Omaha Beach, and when he won the Arkansas Derby and beat Galilean again, Flavian Pratt was not happy. And what happens? He winds up winning the Derby on disqualification with 60-1 shot, 70-1 shot. So it's crazy the way things work out. So now he's got a chance to beat his old buddy / nemesis in this race with Higher Power, who was, you know, obviously he's got to throw out his Breeders' Cup. He's going to be dangerous in here. But there are certain horses you have to look at. You know, even a horse like for a price, even a horse like True Timber, who's coming off of, you know, who's run his two best races of his career have been in the Cigar Mile. He just barely got beat 2 years ago. And then last year, he ran he closed well. He ran a pretty good third behind Maximum Security and Spun to Run. Tax looks like he's coming into the race in good shape. I don't know if Diamond Noops, I don't know if he's ready to go this far. I don't know if he wants to go this far. Seeking the Soul, you never know about. He's in terrible form. I mean, he just hasn't really done much. So I just don't know if he's quite ready. You know, he's got Johnny Velasquez back again. War Stories here. What else is new? You know, we know what he is. You know, and then actually the horse to watch in the race, by the way, if you were looking for a horse who's working his tail off, Mucho Gusto. You know, listen, Mucho Gusto ran awesome in the Haskell, and actually I thought he ran a tremendous race in the Travers. He was fighting for the lead every step of the way, and he hung in there until the very end, still finished third. I thought, and he hasn't run since September, but he's coming off of four straight bullet workouts, 2 at 5 furlongs and 2 at 6 furlongs, including his last workout in 1:11.3. I mean, that's a very, very strong work. So I would, you know, listen, it's Baffert, which I ran a tease of all people riding him. I certainly would not throw him out. And he's going to benefit, you know, with his early speed, he's going to benefit from Spun to Run coming out, you know, which is a shame because he looked like he was ready to run a big race. And then you've got the third most memorable horse in the country in here, in Bodie Express.
Exactly.
So hopefully he'll give people a legitimate reason to remember him. But I mean, listen, I'm not going to go against Omaha Beach. I mean, he's just too good. But you know, if I was at the track, you know, I'd throw a few bucks on a few other horses. You know, Tax is coming. Tax worked 46 and change, and it was probably faster than he wanted because they came back and worked him 51 and change. So you know that after the 46 and change, you know, they came back and said, whatever you do, do not work fast on this horse. Just take it easy on him because, you know, that was a little bit, that might have been a little bit too fast. But Tax is a good horse, better horse than people think. So he's kind of sneaky in here. I would definitely put him in the exotics. But, you know, Higher Power, After Omaha Beach, anything, any of these horses can finish in the money. But you know, listen, I got to stick with Omaha Beach. I just hope he doesn't win by 20 lengths. Looking like some super horse in the race.
Now that's been the four. That's really been what we've had in this event. I mean, we've had kind of a crowning coda to careers in this. So
yeah, I know. But the thing is, those horses, they had basically proven to what they were. The horses that have won this race, they had done so much. We knew what they were ahead of time. So you know, we knew they were retiring well ahead of time. And it wasn't much more they were going to do. I mean, Gunrunner was going to, you know, I mean, he was, we knew what he was going to do. And some of these other horses was coming to the end of their careers.
Well, Arrogate and City of Light, you know.
What's that?
Arrogate and City of Light, the other, those are the three.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, Arrogate, unfortunately, did not retire after that race. If he had, we certainly would have been wondering how great he could have been. But and then last year, with City of Light, it was another horse that, you know, he was well established. We knew he wasn't going to do that much more than he's already done. But Omaha Beach, his future is limitless. And you got to remember when Gunrunner was a 5-year-old when he won it. I mean, this horse is just turning 4, and you know it's the same with City of Light. You know, when they keep him in training for one more start as a 5-year-old, it's a big difference than keeping him in training for the one more start as a 4-year-old, because they have who knows what kind of a year ahead of them, and we'll see what happens. You know, and we'll see what happens with the pace, which it's fun to run. You know, you're prepping for a $3 million race, and your horse comes down with hives. I mean, you just never know in this game.
Well, we'll look to Bodie Express to make up some of the pace scenario, and we'll see who takes advantage of it. Steve, I appreciate this. Was great. We got a lot, covered a lot of ground. Got to get Rich Eng in here, and we'll do some recapping next week, and we'll have the Holy Bull to look forward to with the Tis the Law shaping up against the local talent, Chance It, and as seen on TV.
Yep. All righty.
Steve Askin, everybody, and Derby Dozen, and plenty more. I didn't even get a chance to talk about Plug Nickel with you. Save that away for next week.
Plug Nickel. Well, remember him very well.
I figured, and came up with Tony talked about Buck Thornburg's passing. And
So that's how. You ever get a chance, by the way, quickly, watch the head-on of the Wood Memorial. Because he had a tendency to bear out really badly.
Yeah.
Watch the way he herds Genuine Risk in that race. She ran a tremendous race in there because she got herded the whole length of the stretch when horses, you know, Buck Thornburg, he couldn't keep that horse in. He did it in the Florida Derby, won from the 10 pass. After the race, Leroy Jolly said, "No way, this horse, she's running in the Derby." And then Bert Firestone overruled him. But, Genuine Risk actually ran a heck of a race. She got hurt really badly by Buck Nickel in that race.
Well, that became a dress rehearsal. Steve, I appreciate it, and enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Yeah, you too.
Steve Askin, everybody, and we'll recap. We'll see what goes on. Pegasus and Eclipse Awards tonight. Let's take a break here, get Rich Eng in, and wrap up this busy Thursday. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? and not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American foal crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Oh, yeah. Open up your heart, what do you feel? Open up your heart, what do you feel?
We're back at the races. Got about 15 minutes to spend with Rich Ang.